Gagliano.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is John Gagliano. I represent the appellants.
What's your 10 and 5? We don't have it on our sheet. Your time is 10 and 5. Okay. Go ahead.
The appellants who are four plaintiffs in the case below who are injured when their Cirrus aircraft, a small aircraft, lost engine power and impacted the ground. The question at issue here, the main question at least, is whether there is personal jurisdiction over the aircraft manufacturer Cirrus in Florida. The Florida Supreme Court, in a case called Venetian and Salami, which we cited in our brief, citing to the U.S. Supreme Court in Burger King, said that personal jurisdiction, each case rests on its own facts. Here are the facts, Your Honors. The aircraft that crashed was purchased from Cirrus as a brand new aircraft in October of 2014. It crashed in November of 2014. Robert Hinkle is a Florida resident. The purchase was made through Mr. Hinkle's Florida LLC, called Hedderbug LLC.
Where was the contract signed?
The contract was signed in Florida. The aircraft was delivered FOB Minnesota, Your Honor. Cirrus's contract for sale listed the buyer as the Florida LLC at the Florida address. The United States Federal Aviation Administration's bill of sale for the aircraft, which is a required federal public record, lists Cirrus as the seller and the Florida LLC as the buyer. The aircraft was registered by the FAA in Florida, and the aircraft's registration fee was paid by Hedderbug LLC, a Florida entity. The bargain for provision of the contract of sale included a 5-year, quote, tail-to-spinner warranty. Tail-to-spinner are parts of an aircraft equivalent to bumper-to-bumper. It's a full aircraft warranty. And to fulfill that warranty in Florida, Cirrus has a network of 24 factory-authorized service and training centers just within the Sarasota area.
None of which had ever serviced or trained anything in connection with this aircraft.
Unfortunately, no, Your Honor, because the aircraft was brand new and delivered defectively.
I know, but that still doesn't change the fact that the service and training centers. Are you arguing general, or are you arguing the long-arm statute?
No, Your Honor. Based on the record, specific jurisdiction applies here.
But we know that the aircraft was serviced in Maryland, right?
I believe it was serviced in Virginia.
Somewhere.
It was not. It was serviced outside of Florida upon right after initial delivery because the door wouldn't close.
And the order that they got from Hinkle listed a Virginia address, correct?
I don't believe that's correct, Your Honor. I believe that the contract had a Hedderbug LLC's Florida address.
I don't know if there's an order different from the contract. It depends on how the prompt.
I do know that the bail of sale registered with the FAA, which conferred the rights entitled to the aircraft from Cirrus to Hedderbug LLC, lists the Florida address.
Was sales through the sales representative assigned to Virginia, Maryland, Pennsylvania?
That was the sales rep that Cirrus had who contacted Mr. Hinkle. However, Cirrus maintains a registered agent in Florida and a full-time sales representative in Florida, and there's more.
Neither of whom had any contact with the plaintiff, correct?
Your Honor,
I mean, the answer is yes, but isn't
the answer is no, but we didn't have any jurisdictional discovery to say there's these were individual state representatives, Virginia, Florida. There's a regional representative. We don't have any discovery as to the paperwork that crossed the desk, the approvals at the regional level in the East Coast. So I will tell you, Your Honor, that Cirrus maintains a registered agent in Florida. They are registered to do business in Florida. In fact, there were two lawsuits in the court below before they were consolidated. They were both served in Florida to Cirrus's registered agent. This wasn't pointed out in the briefs, but it is in the record. I'd point the court to Appendix Volume 1, Docket Number 7. For the Hinkle matter, it's page 12 of 194. Appendix Volume 1, Docket Number 7, on page 32 of 194 for the Skinner action, shows that this lawsuit was served on Cirrus via its agent for service of process, Plantation, Florida. Cirrus has multiple employees here. It has defended 7 lawsuits in Florida. More significantly, Cirrus has been a plaintiff in a lawsuit in Florida. They initiated it.
Actually, a question. Are you arguing under the Florida specific jurisdiction long arm statute?
Yes, Your Honor.
So that's 48-193?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, and it's got a whole list there of things you can do. I gather you've only really litigated 4 of them, and at this point you're looking at the first one, which is operating or carrying on a business in the state. Is that right?
Yes, Your Honor, or a business venture, which...
That's still number one there, right?
Yes, Your
Honor.
Looking at
193-1A. I just want to get the law where I'm operating, all right? That's what we're talking about. And it seems to me that a lot of what you're going through to emphasize in your oral argument, just so we can figure out how it fits, is that you're demonstrating that that defendant operated, conducted, engaged in, or carried on a business or business venture in Florida or had an office in the state, that you're fitting within that. Is that correct?
Your Honor, there's an additional reason, and that is a tort committed in the state, and there is an intentional tort of fraud that is pled in both of these actions.
Let's do one at a time, then. Sure. All right. If you want to do the tortious one, we can talk about that. Doesn't it also, in under A, before you get into listed 1, 2, 3, 4, have to say arising from the act, so that when you say, well, they had a business operation there, but the tort has to arise from that, right, under the literal language of this statute, right? So when you list all these things that they do conducting business in the state, to the extent that the cause of action doesn't arise from that, they're irrelevant. Is that true or not?
Well, they engage in a contract.
That's a yes or no question. Do you want me to say it again?
It arises from the sale because they sold to the Florida entity.
Your answer then is yes, it has to arise from.
Yes, it does, Your Honor.
Okay. And so when you say things like, well, they have other offices or
they've been sued seven times,
you're including that in as it arises from that as well?
That goes to the jurisdictional the 14th Amendment due process argument of minimum contacts, Your Honor.
Well, okay, but you've got to get through this also, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
So I'm wondering how they support, or maybe they don't. They just support another part of your argument. Is that it? But they don't become a basis for specific jurisdiction, long arm jurisdiction, even though they might be operating, conducting, engaging in, or carrying on a business or business venture in Florida, unless the cause of action arises from them.
Yes, Your Honor. Breach of warranty is a cause of action, although the
you're back to the tortious claim now, or what?
Yes, Your Honor.
Well, I'm trying to get under, you're giving up on number one then, right? I'm trying to get at what did you do to operate in Florida from which this cause of action arose?
Yes, Your Honor, let me be clear. There is a network of dealers that are available in the Sarasota area for free warranty maintenance, warranty work, repair work, maintenance work.
And from the existence of that network, this cause of action arose.
The breach of warranty cause of action, the reason that the contract was entered into, Your Honor, part of the bargain for sale was the contract. The consideration included 5 years plus 2 of extended warranty service here in Florida.
And how is that an element of the cause of, I mean, how is that, I don't understand how the words arise from apply to that.
Sure, Your Honor.
You can say consistent with or at the same time as.
I would say arise from, Your Honor, because the network that is here was the reason that the aircraft was purchased. In other words, the bargain for consideration of the sale included service in Florida. And Cirrus was able to provide that service in Florida by virtue.
And what's the, and so the cause of action then is failure of warranties? Which cause of action does that arise? I'm still not seeing the connection. Go ahead.
Sure. It would be a breach of warranty and fraud, Your Honor, because Cirrus sold this aircraft with the understanding that it was an airworthy aircraft.
And so if you contract to do 5 things and you don't do one of them, the fact that you also didn't do another one, it arises, your cause of action for the first one arises from the other one? That's what you seem to be saying to me. You contract to do a lot of things, and you warrant a lot of things, and one of them you violate, but not in Florida, But the fifth one, if you had violated it, would have been in Florida. Therefore, the first one arose from your being in Florida. That doesn't seem to connect. I'm not saying that's exactly what happened, but that sounds like what you're arguing. How is what you're arguing different from that?
Because if there are five elements of a contract and one of them is breached, it's still a breach of contract. And breach of contract was pled. In addition to...
But don't you have... Well, now you're... It sounds like you're talking about committing the tortious act in the state. But either way, it would seem like the cause of action, it has elements to it, right? And it's hard to say, well, you violated this part of your duty or this part of your warranty or this part of your contract in one way. But because if you'd violated another part of it, it would have been in Florida. Therefore, the first one arose out of Florida. That's the trouble. That's what it sounds like. Why is it not that? You see the trouble I'm having?
I'm sorry that I didn't understand your question.
Okay. You seem to be saying, well, this happened in Florida. X happened in Florida. Y happened in Florida. X, Y, and A are all part of a bundle, and we're suing for a cause of action that arises under A, but because it's in a bundle that also includes X and Y, the violation of A arose in Florida. That sounds like a non sequitur to me.
Your Honor, they're connected, and let me tell you why. Because, and I see that...
That's my puzzlement. If you understand my puzzlement, you can address it. If I just haven't been clear enough, then it's not going to do any good.
Your Honor, the contract was entered into with Florida, and the basis for the contract was A, an airworthy aircraft, and B, among other things, continued maintenance support, oil changes, which every plane needs, to be provided in Florida by Cirrus's network, and repairs if that aircraft was not airworthy during the warranty period. Okay? Those were to be provided in Florida by Cirrus for free, as part of the bargained for terms of the contract. So those were already paid for by Mr. Hinkle by virtue of the contract, that ongoing relationship with Florida, which Mr. Hinkle understood to be part of it because he knew that there were Cirrus dealers here because he could get his aircraft, his oil changed for free here because he paid for that up front. And Cirrus knew that they were providing that service to Florida because that's where the aircraft was registered to, because that's where the address on the contract was, because that's where the bill of sale with the FAA says that the aircraft was going to, the title was being transferred to Florida. So part of that contractual arrangement was for all of those bundles of things that were paid for in 2014 that were to continue per the contract and the warranties through 2019, and then 2 years after per the...
And in my silly hypothetical, that's the A through Z. Right, but not every one of those was violated. Only one or two of them were violated, or three or four. Right, so one of the one or two or three or four that should have happened in Florida, those are the ones that would seem to, about which you would seem to be able to say that the cause of action arose from it. Are you seeing what my difficulty is? That's my difficulty.
Difficulty is that the plane broke because it wasn't, before it had a chance to be fixed.
Because it should have been fixed and wasn't.
That's right. Well, no one knew.
So it didn't really cause, it didn't arise out of the aspect of the contract that provided for repairs, because that's not what it arose out of.
The plane took off from Florida on the day of the crash with a flight plan in Florida, and it traveled to a destination in South Carolina. It broke in South Carolina, but it took off from Florida.
Let me try this.
Yes, Your Honor.
Suppose the plane needed a repair, but nobody knew it. That's your position. And as a result, nobody requested a repair in Florida. So the failure was not a breach of the obligation to repair when one was requested or made known. The breach was of not giving them an airplane that didn't need a repair. If it had, if
If the plaintiff had said, I don't like that knock, and had gone to a center in Florida and asked for a repair, and they said, no, go away, we're too busy, or that's not covered after all, you're mistaken. That would arise from, and as a result of the failure to repair, when he requested it, as he had a right to do, it crashes. That would arise from the repair obligation under the contract in Florida. But that's not what happened. That's the difficulty, I think. That's the difficulty I have.
I don't want to speak for Judge Rogers, but that...
It's more nicely stated, perhaps.
Two points, then, Your Honor. First, there was a latent defect in the aircraft that was sold to Florida.
But not because of repairs available in Florida.
Which brings me to the next point. The aircraft was warranted to be airworthy. Sierra said, we warrant, there's a certificate of airworthiness. They made representations, and they then provided a continuing warranty to Florida. And the fact that it wasn't...
Surely you're not saying that if it was warranted to be airworthy, if they fly across 14 states, it was not airworthy in all 14 states, and you could sue in all of those 14 states.
No, Your Honor.
Well, then what are you concluding from the fact that it was airworthy? Just being warranted to be airworthy the cause of action doesn't arise out of every place that an airplane warranted to be airworthy is located, does it?
No, Your Honor, but the aircraft was sold with that warranty to Florida. I can't.
Okay.
I understand. I think we'll give you all 5 minutes in reply if you need it. I believe so, since we took most of your time. So, Mr. Mullins, it looked to me like you were very anxious to get to the microphone.
Always excited to talk to you, Your Honor.
Let me ask you, and I should have asked Mr. Gagliano, and if he wants to answer, you can. What effect, if any, how does it play into this? I believe the remaining litigation is in Wisconsin State Court. Am I right?
Yes, Your Honor, what happened was that after they got dismissed below, they filed what they called safety actions of South Carolina and Wisconsin.
So that's just a placeholder, right?
Well, actually, it's the only case pending. What's happened now, Your Honor, is that there were three defendants originally.
Right.
They settled with Continental. There's no lawsuit pending below. The case is over. We were sued in South Carolina. We got out. They were dismissed because it was fortuitous that the crash occurred for due process purposes. South Carolina... Their long arm ties into the due process, and the trial court found that it was just fortuitous that the crash occurred in South Carolina. The flight was going from Florida to Virginia.
So that one's dismissed.
That's dismissed. And they also had dismissed, as you know, our co-appellate, our appellee, rather, Cavlico. They've been dismissed, and they're dismissed from this appeal. The only case that's pending is Wisconsin. They're ready to go to trial. Discovery's closed. This has been pending for quite a while.
Why are we here?
That's a very good question, Your Honor. I had the same question. We don't know why we're here, honestly, because I don't understand why. They have a trial date. They're ready to go. And they're going to get a trial date. There's going to be a hearing, I believe, in March that will set the trial date, and we expect that to be in June, but discovery's closed. But
you're not saying this case is moot.
Your Honor, I can't say it's moot. I think that you do look at the burden on the defendant.
If we reversed, then it could proceed below, right?
It could, but I think what would moot the case...
As a practical matter, it probably wouldn't.
Well, I think it could be mooted in this respect, Your Honor. I believe that the Wisconsin case is, by practical matter, is going to go faster. It will be res judicata. There's been no stay, and we're certainly going to argue and pretend we're going to go forward in Wisconsin. Our clients spent a lot of money there and ready to go. That case is going to go to trial before anything happens. They're going to have to reopen a file because the case has been dismissed, and they let that happen. The case is gone. It's been dismissed with prejudice.
You're talking about here?
Yes, down below.
Yeah, but I mean, they let it happen. They filed a notice of appeal.
No, I understand, but they'll have to go back and reopen the case. Am I saying that practically is that I believe that the Wisconsin case will finish before, even if you would reversed, even if the for whatever reason, the trial judge, you know, goes forward, we went forward, the Wisconsin case is going to usurp that. But let me go talk about the facts, because you asked a lot of questions. I want to clarify the record. And the record's undisputed from the affidavit of Mr. McIsaac. And this is undisputed. They didn't contest. And as we talk about Venetian Salami, they file the allegations, we file evidence and rebuttal, they filed no evidence and rebuttal to the following, that the aircraft was ordered by Mr. Hinkle in Virginia. It's attached by the order form in Virginia, it's paragraph 13. Paragraph 14, the aircraft was sold to the Florida LLC. And I think this is important because the LLC, and it goes to the questions that Judge Rogers was asking, this lawsuit is not about a Florida LLC suing because they got a defective aircraft and their damages are. This is a personal injury lawsuit of a crash out of state. And we submit, I have seen no case in which the cause of action accrues in a personal injury case where the place of injury is outside the state of Florida. The only case that we were able to find is the Clay case, the Middle District of Florida, that the trial judge relied on. But I have found no case, and they have certainly cited no case, which the cause of action could possibly accrue under any of the items of a Florida long-arm statute where there's been no injury in the state.
So you say that in your brief. So that is your position, that in order for there to be specific jurisdiction, it has to be in the place the accident occurred.
Yes, Your Honor. Clearly, if you go through, Your Honor, there's four long-arm sections that they went through. The first two, obviously, well, I say the first two on my list, tort in the state obviously requires injury to state because, by definition, the tort's not completed until there's injury.
But you're saying if they, for instance, in the example that Chief Judge Carnes gave, if as part of their contract they worked on it and they butchered the engine and it flew off and the injury occurred in South Carolina, you read this long-arm statute and the cases to say that there's no specific jurisdiction?
Your Honor.
Yes or no?
The answer is yes.
That's a pretty strange reading of the language of the statute.
Yeah, I understand.
It clearly arose in common terms that I was asking your opposing counsel about.
It arose out of the
negligence that occurred when they fulfilled their contract didn't fulfill their contract in Florida, which seems to be exactly what, I mean, I guess we shouldn't be arguing about something that's not before us.
It's a fair point, Your Honor, and I've struggled hard with that question because I thought you would ask me.
Usually better to come up with a defense with an argument that's defensible in other types of situations as well.
But I do have one, and the reason why I say what I just said is because of the personal injury nature of this. And I do think you're right that it would be a harder case, and we're not there, that if in fact there had been warranty work done by Cirrus in the state, et cetera, then there would be a better argument that it arose out of those activities. I'm just saying that at least the authority that I've seen has said that injury has to be, when it's a personal injury case, the injury has to be out of the state. But I recognize that you don't need to reach that issue. Clearly, as you pointed out, and it's undisputed in the evidence, Cirrus, as we put it out in our affidavit, at no point did they perform any of the actions regarding maintenance, repair in the state of Florida. That's undisputed. It's also undisputed that all the manufacturing, design, assembly of the aircraft was in Minnesota. It's undisputed that Mr. Hinkle never contacted anyone in Florida. We have a Florida sales representative. He did not use him. He used a Virginia representative. And the other thing, Your Honor, and remember, we have to look at the whole thing. We've been talking about Mr. Hinkle. There's other plaintiffs here. There's been no mention of the Skinners. Skinners, obviously, we didn't know business with the Skinners in Florida. We didn't breach a contract with Skinners in Florida. We didn't commit a tort in the state with the Skinners or Mrs. Hinkle, or frankly, Mr. Hinkle. Because when you talk about breach of contract in the state, the language of the statute says, this is what the statute says, in this state, by failing to perform acts required to be performed in the state. And so under Judge Rogers, your point, yes, it would be a harder case if, in fact, we breached a warranty, and then we messed up the performance, and then the plane takes off and crashes. I agree with you that situation will be a harder case. And then at that point, maybe you do make law and say, in that situation, if the personal injury happened out of state, then it violates that statute.
It's not making law. I mean, there are Florida cases that say that already, that it's not necessary for the injury to occur in Florida.
Well, the cases, though, are cases that say that the defendant does not need to be in the state, but I'm not aware of any plane crash cases where the injury has occurred, the crash has occurred outside, and the defendant's been held liable. In fact, we pointed out In addition, like, for example, the Price case, which is talking about causing injury to persons in the state, the plaintiff was injured off the coast of Texas. He was a Florida resident. That was found not to violate causing injury to persons in the state because the injury was outside the state. I'm just not aware of those cases, Your Honor. This is not the case.
The district court relied on Hollingsworth and Allerton, I believe, for the proposition that the injury had to take place inside Florida. That was part of the basis for his ruling.
You have to look at each of the elements, right? So one is.
But anyway, that's not what those cases say. Just so you know.
Well,
I don't think that. I mean, I don't know that that's dispositive of the case, but.
Your Honor, I appreciate it. I think we have to step back and see what this record shows. Is there a tort in the state? We certainly, the crash occurred in South Carolina. We delivered the aircraft in Minnesota. What tort did Cirrus commit in the state? We designed the aircraft, and so that in Minnesota, we delivered it in Minnesota. Those were all undisputed. What tort possibly did Cirrus commit in the state of Florida? Causing injury in the state, clearly this court in Hesterly, district court in Hesterly, citing this court's decision in Snow, that section says causing injury to persons in the state. Clearly that requires injury in the state, because that says it right in the statute. This court in Snow has said that requires injury in the state. Business in the state.
Still arguing that it has to cause injury in the state?
It depends on the sections, Your Honor. So if I was going through each one of them.
Well, I mean, we know it didn't cause injury in the state, but I don't know. Seems like you're trying to get us to say something broad so that you can rely on it in a different case that isn't before us.
I certainly would not.
We're resisting that a little bit. Focus on the arguments that you need, which are stronger than the ones that you don't need.
Your Honor, I certainly am not trying to get you to put a broad ruling. I was just trying to go through each of the sections. The one I was talking about clearly requires injury in the states in the language of it. The next one is business in the state. That one, I think you pointed out, it has to specifically arise out of, and because we did not do any warranty work, we did not do any maintenance work, therefore we certainly did not do any business in the state, and I reject the arguments made by counsel because his plaintiff ordered it from Virginia, picked it up in Minnesota, and then registered it in a Florida LLC. My position is that that's not business in the state because at most, the only one did business at most with the LLC, and they're not a plaintiff in the case. And these state statutes have to be strictly construed. And then we talk about breach of contract in the state. Similarly, we did nothing to breach a contract in the state because we never did warranty work, et cetera. So I think in those grounds, but I don't want to frustrate you, so I'll go to the due process. Even if you met any of those long-arm statutes, I certainly believe that you can never meet Bristol-Myers because at that point, then you look at the evidence of what did Cirrus do in the state and the activities in the forum, and then you look at Bristol-Myers and what did Cirrus do in the state of Florida when there's a manufacturer design delivery of an aircraft sold by a Virginia sales representative, and then all that's connected to Florida here is it's titled in an LLC, happened to be owned by Mr. Hinkle. Under no situation do I believe, and the trial court found on page 2, her order says.
Did you argue this in your brief, these additional arguments?
Your Honor, I don't believe these are additional arguments. We argue that the due process was not met. If you look at page 2 of the district court order, she finds that due process is not met both under general jurisdiction and specific jurisdiction. And specifically, she says that this Squibb-Myers was not met. Appellant's counsel has argued due process in her own brief, and I think it's clearly at issue in this appeal. And so I think it's appropriate to argue. We certainly have argued due process standards there. I'm just arguing under Squibb-Myers, which we've cited throughout our brief, yes, Your Honor, that it has simply not been met here. Certainly due process has not been met.
My apologies to Judge Honeywell. The district judge.
I make a mistake all the time. There's been a lot of questions on jurisdictional discovery, real easy on that. I think the Mazur case clearly controls that. They did not ask for enlargement of time to take discovery. And that's exactly what happened to Mazur. Unless the court has any other questions, I still have 2 minutes, but unless the court has any questions. We thank you so much. We ask for affirmance.
Thank you. Mr. Gagliano, 5 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. Counsel just told you that they argued, Cirrus argued that this case should have been and was dismissed from South Carolina because the crash there was fortuitous, and it was dismissed there. What Cirrus is arguing totally eviscerates the concept of specific jurisdiction. Their principal place of business is Minnesota. They're incorporated in Wisconsin. According to Cirrus, those are the only two places they can be sued. Now, turning back to the long-arm statute, counsel mentioned the other people, the passengers. They were passengers in the plane. Mr. Hinkle was the pilot. He was the owner of the LLC. The other four people were passengers. They were third-party beneficiaries to the contract and to the warranties and to the representations of Cirrus that existed for their benefit as passengers in that aircraft. Speaking of this specific case, it was pre-flighted by the pilot in Florida. It was inspected by him in Florida. He relied on the representations of airworthiness, which were false, bringing up the fraud claim. And
it was certified as airworthy in Minnesota, right?
It was the certs. Yes, Your Honor, it was certified as airworthy in Minnesota. The ongoing warranty, however, as part of the contract, and again, the long-arm statute includes a breach of contract. In Florida, warranty is construed as a contract. Right, the plane wasn't airworthy. It was warranted to be, and to correct those deficiencies in airworthiness under the warranty, they were to be corrected via Cirrus's authorized service network, which Mr. Hinkle relied upon, and their locations outside Sarasota, 24 of them.
Would you address, before I forget, once again to ask you, the effect of real-world effect of the pending litigation in Wisconsin?
Your Honor.
I'll just be candid, we've got a lot to do, and we don't need to be issuing a decision in this case that's not going to affect the ultimate outcome of who gets what when.
Yes, Your Honor. Your Honor, I don't represent the plaintiffs in the court below, either in Florida or in Wisconsin, and I honestly do not know the status of the litigation in Wisconsin.
Okay, fair enough.
So I can't address that.
Why don't you, I'm not saying we're gonna wait, but why don't you inquire of the folks who do represent the plaintiffs elsewhere and send us a letter about your understanding of the status of that, and opposing counsel actually would not hurt for y'all to get together and try to send a joint letter. It just is relevant to our work priorities, if nothing else, because if that case is going to trial and it's going to reach a resolution of liability issues, or at least, as he mentioned, they're going to decide some issues that may well be res judicata, and I can't imagine why they wouldn't be. There's not a whole lot of sense in us sending this back, if we agree with you, to the district court, if we agree with him. But then again, that's kind of pointless if an affirmance isn't going to affect the result of the actual who gets what, if anything, from the other party. So just think about that and let us know. I mean, it's been great hearing from y'all, and it's always good to see you. But we've got cases where we're the only court in town to decide in that litigation, so to speak, and we, we've, we owe those parties, since it'll make a difference, some priority in our work hours, I would think. I'm not necessarily asking for an explanation. I'm just telling you why I'm interested in the Wisconsin case. And of course, you just got one defendant left, and I don't want to stand in the way of y'all sending us another letter. And if you so choose to do so, that's up to you and your clients.
I endorse everything that the Chief Judge said, but it's possible, I suppose, that you prefer to be in Florida rather than Wisconsin, even now after you've done all that work, and that's what you would be reporting to us about.
Absolutely, Your Honor.
Yeah, but let me tell you, I'm not asking you to pick one. I'm asking you, he says they've got a March hearing to set probably a June trial date, and if that is accurate, I'd like to know about that before I at least spend any time reading one of my colleagues' opinions or trying to draft one myself in the case. Sir.
And I don't know that, quite honestly, and plaintiffs do prefer to be in Florida, and again, it's an issue of specific jurisdiction. There's general jurisdiction over Cirrus. They're claiming that's the only place they can be sued for an airplane crash, where they send airplanes all over the country, and 9% of their fleet, over 400 aircraft, are registered in Florida.
I understand. And I'm not saying that if y'all come back and say it's a dead certainty that there's going to be a June 1st trial date, you won't get a decision out of us. I'm just saying it's relevant and something I would like to know about and consider and discuss with my colleagues, if you could inform us.
Absolutely, Your Honor. We will honor that request. I will talk to counsel and potentially send a joint letter, but at a minimum, I can promise you that you'll get a letter from the appellants.
It would be an encouraging sign if you'd send a joint letter. If you just send one from you, if you'd follow up, and I'm not going to put a deadline on you. That just when you can.
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. We'll take that case under submission. Stand in recess.